Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, it's Owen Jones. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're speaking to Richard Bergen, who's one of the most prominent left-wing Labour MPs and critics of the current Labour leadership. I want to talk to him about, is it all over for the Labour left? Is it game over? What's the future of the left? What's its message to the country? How can it ever regain influence and power? What's the strategy? What's the narrative? We talk about Keir Starmer. Did he lie to become leader? What's his future as Labour leader? And we talk about a whole range of other issues. I think it's really interesting and engaging stuff, so do listen. Do support us on patreon.com/OwenJones84 so we keep doing the podcast, the channel, the documentaries and everything we do with the incredible team who are all infinitely more talented than me. Or use the supporter function, which you can see in the podcast description. Do leave us a review and some stars if you want to spread the word so other people listen. And do subscribe. And with that, please listen to me chatting to Richard.
Richard, it is an honour to have you here. A fellow Northerner, though I'd say you're more authentic Northerner. I'm now a plastic Northerner. I don't believe that.
Don't be so unkind on yourself, Owen.
I'm going actually, I'm back up in Sheffield where I was born. I left when I was four, so I am a plastic Yorkshireman for my brother's wedding. But the North. Oh, yeah, obviously, you know, you represent a Northern constituency. You've kept your Northern accent far better than I have. I think you're a very proud Northerner.
Oh, definitely. I'm proud of where I come from. But I remember one of my favourite folk musicians, Dick Gocken, once said, it's okay to be proud about where you're from, but you'd be proud of where everyone else comes from as well. So I'm a proud Northerner, but I'm not some kind of Northern nationalist, if you know what I mean. Somebody who has the kind of wrong ideas about class based upon an analysis of the North as opposed to the South. I love the North. I love Yorkshire. I love Leeds. I love where I'm from. But I don't get carried away with it the exclusion of all else. I think that's a dangerous path if we're not careful.
Yeah, I agree. Well, less. I don't know if that was a dig at the Northern Independence Party. Bless them. Very good at memes, but maybe not the grand success they expected. Just to begin, Richard. So I'll just throw this at you. I'll do a bam. Kind of the left in the Labour Party is all over, isn't it? Game over. Everyday socialists are ripping up their membership cards. The leader of the leadership of the Labour Party, they don't want people like you in the Labour Party. They don't want other people on the left. The 10 pledges Keir Starmer made to keep a lot of the domestic radical policies of the Corbyn era, they're all being abandoned. It's game over. They're never going to let the left anywhere near the leadership of the Labour Party again. There's my little doom and gloom thrown at you. What's your response?
I think there's actually reasons for optimism. And that may seem strange, but the fact that Jeremy became leader of the Labour Party shows that I think the left strategy of remaining in the Labour Party and being involved as a left in the Labour Party and in wider social movements outside the Labour Party at the same time is the correct approach, in my opinion. I remember before Jeremy became leader of the Labour Party, people saying there's no point in being a left-wing member of the Labour Party. It's a waste of time. You're wasting your time, you're wasting everyone else's time. And actually, the election of Jeremy as leader, and then his re-election, and then the fact that we nearly won the 2017 general election showed, I think, that that does work. I understand, of course, that people feel despondent because the truth is that Keir Starmer and the leadership have actually shown a greater zeal for attacking the left of their own party than they have for holding the Tories to account. So it's no wonder that people feel down and despondent. Left members have been treated horrendously. You know, we've seen the way this week Ken Loach has been expelled from the Labour Party. We've seen the way that Jeremy is a Labour member and a member of Parliament, but not a Labour member of Parliament. And of course, both Jeremy needs to be reinstated to the PLP and Ken Loach needs to be back in the Labour Party. So I can understand why people feel demoralised, but people felt as bad as this before. And then there were great advances for the left, both in the Labour Party and more widely electorally as well.
Do you think Keir Starmer lied in his leadership campaign that the basis of which he stood, some would say he argued that he would be essentially a kind of more electable, professionalised version of Jeremy Corbyn, keep a lot of the radicalism, unite the Labour Party, be electable. Do you think it was it an intentional, willful attempt to deceive and lie?
If he'd have said the kind of leadership he'd provide, he wouldn't have won that election. That's the truth. You know, I didn't support him. I supported Becky. But I do know members on the left, a minority, I suppose, members on the left, but a significant minority of members on the left who voted for Keir Starmer on the basis that you've just said. And, you know, that was wrong. You know, we were told really, I think the message from Keir during his leadership election was you get to keep the domestic economic policies of Jeremy's leadership. And maybe some of the wider internationalist policies wouldn't be pursued in the same way. But that isn't what's happened. He said he'd be a unity leader, bringing the party together. Nothing could have been further from the truth. They've actually waged war on the left membership of the Labour Party. And nothing delights the right-wingers around Keir Starmer more than when left Labour members leave the Labour Party. It almost encourages bad behaviour. So the leadership carries out some kind of outrage. Understandably, left members then feel further demoralised. Left members leave. And actually, that incentivises people like Mandelson and others to encourage the leadership to take more and more egregious steps against the left, because they get their reward, and their reward is left members leaving. It doesn't teach them a lesson, or well, it does. It teaches them the lesson that should carry on doing this because they benefit from it politically, because it changes the balance of forces within the party.
We had two by-elections, one in Hartlepool, in which Labour lost. Obviously, Labour, under Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, actually kept that seat in 2017. Over half the electorate in the constituency voted Labour in that election. And in 2019, Labour's vote share fell in Hartlepool, but actually was still a higher vote share than 2015. And the Brexit Party got a lower vote share in 2019 than UKIP won in Hartlepool in 2015. Batley and Spen, again, over half the electorate voted for Labour in 2017, fell again in 2019. And Labour kept onto that seat with the skin of its teeth. It was presented that as a grand victory for Keir Starmer's leadership, even though it was the lowest share of the vote for Labour in generations in Batley and Spen, including when Labour haven't won that seat. Interesting response from some supporters of passionate supporters of Keir Starmer, who, for example, after I did a documentary there in which I interviewed candidates, including George Galloway, tried to pretend that I supported a man I actually have nothing but contempt for. But what obviously, having held on to Batley and Spen, albeit by the thinnest of majorities, which was spun as a great triumph, if that was extrapolated into a general election, Labour would lose dozens of seats, and it really would be questions about whether the Labour would continue as a viable party of government based on and the polling ever since. I suppose the question is, some people would say, when's it time up for Keir Starmer? And some on the left, on if I read my Twitter feed, will say, well, actually, the Socialist Campaign Group, which is the left grouping of the Parliamentary Labour Party, actually should be more out there agitating and demanding a change of leadership. But that hasn't been the strategy. So I'm just wondering, what is the thinking amongst left Labour MPs? Because I suppose it's not just that the kind of argument of exchange some of your principles, but you're more likely to get power, because at the moment Labour's polling is generally very bad. When does it become a question of just calling for a change of leadership?
I think that if we hadn't have won in Batley and Spen, I think Keir Starmer would have been on his way out. You know, I was very glad that we won in Batley and Spen. I went to campaign there three times. But I do think we need to be honest and say that wasn't Keir Starmer's victory. If the candidate hadn't have been Kim Leadbeater, who was very rooted in the community and with her particular experiences, of course, the sister of Joe Cox, but so much more besides, I don't think we would have won that by-election. So it shouldn't have been seen as some kind of grand endorsement or triumph for the Labour leadership showing their approach is correct. Now, in terms of where we are now, obviously the opinion polls aren't in a good place. And I do think it's a false, simplistic view that's put forward by the leadership and people around it. The idea that it's, you know, principles or electability. Someone said on Twitter the other day, somebody showed me, that Keir promised to be Jeremy Corbyn and electable, but is turned into a kind of unelectable version of Tony Blair. And I think many people had great sympathy with that analysis when they saw it. In terms of the Socialist Campaign Group, I think it's useful to reflect upon the history of the Socialist Campaign Group. It was formed in 1982 by Tony Benn. So it kind of represents the Bennite wing of the Parliamentary Labour Party and very much a bridge between the left in the Parliamentary Labour Party, the left in the membership, the left in the trade unions, and the left in wider social movements, including the anti-war movement. It was from the Socialist Campaign Group that, of course, Jeremy's leadership candidacy emerged, and he had three members of the Socialist Campaign Group, Jeremy, John and Dan being the three key people in the leadership between 2015 and 2020. But the politics of the campaign group isn't homogenous. You know, there's a kind of majority of the campaign group, I think there's 34 Labour MPs are in it, a majority of the MPs in the campaign group are kind of from that Bennite, Corbynite, McDonaldite, kind of Dan Abbott tradition. But some don't have that exact same politics. They're on the left of British politics, yes, but it's not a homogenous group. So that's the reality. People sometimes say to us, oh, why haven't you challenged for the leadership? Well, of course, you need 40 MPs to challenge for the leadership. So even if that's something the group decided it wanted to do, the group wouldn't have the numbers for that. But all the key rebellions where on points of principle we've had to vote against the three-line whip, the campaign group, you know, has been the core of those rebellions and we're carrying on making the arguments against war, carrying on making the arguments for the kind of modern socialist leadership that we think we need, actually, not only because it's the right thing to do, because actually we do think that's the way to be electable when we look at all the crises facing us in our society today, whether it be the economy, whether it be the pandemic, whether it be climate catastrophe, whether that be the threat of war. We actually think that a left approach has the answers to these huge problems.
And another kind of, I suppose, critique of the Labour left. I mean, it's partly what kind of you alluded to there, which is the Labour left can't get its act together. It's divided amongst itself. Even the left grouping, the campaign group, is hopelessly divided. There's no coherent strategy. There's no coherent narrative. It's become very introspective, talking, you know, to an audience which has become ever diminished as people leave the Labour Party and not having a message which is aimed at a country in which actually objectively the polling shows millions of people support policies long associated with the left. So what would you say to that at the moment? The left, hopelessly divided, no obvious strategy, no clear message to the country, essentially talking to itself.
I don't think that the left is hopelessly divided. It's often easy for our critics to say that we're somehow not speaking to the country and are just inwardly focused because we're often responding to attacks on the left within the Labour Party from the Labour leadership. But of course, we have no option other than to respond to those attacks. But you're right. The important task for the left is speaking to the country. And we do believe that the left should feel confident. And by the way, the Socialist Campaign Group is both bigger in number and I think bigger in influence and activity than it was before Jeremy became leader of the party back in 2015. And so I understand that some people's take on the role of the campaign group is influenced by the fact that during their years of political activity, often because the only maybe were 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, when Jeremy became leader. All they've known is the time of a left-led Labour Party and then a Keir Starmer, a led Labour Party afterwards. So that's the contrast that they see. But the left should be confident on all the big questions. The left has been proven correct. And I don't say this to boast or beat our chest about it. But let's look at the last 20 years, for example. If 20 years ago, people had talked about the global pandemic, an American intervention in Afghanistan, which has lasted longer than the Vietnam War, the fact that climate catastrophe is happening now, all of these things would be seen as some, in the banking crash, all of these things would have been seen as something almost from a science fiction novel. But actually, it's the left that has got all of these big issues correct. And the left has got its policy solutions there about the rotten system that we're living under. So I think the left should be outward looking, should be confident. And as you say, opinion polls show that regardless of which party people support, there's actually big support for lots of left policy solutions. So I think the left needs to be confident, and we shouldn't allow ourselves to be ghettoized. And that's why it does frustrate me when people think that the simple answer is to set up a new political party all the time, with no link to the trade unions. You mentioned the Northern Independence Party earlier. I'm sure that the people in it are very well intentioned. Thelma Walker, for example, is a friend of mine. I have the greatest respect for her. But after all that kind of social media fanfare, they polled 250 votes or so in the Hartlepool by-election. It's not long ago, in 2017, that we were very close to taking state power in one of the most significant economies in the world, a country with a permanent seat on the United Nations Security Council. So I think as a left, despite the awful experience the left has had, despite everything that's been thrown at us, despite people understandably feeling demoralised, we shouldn't allow ourselves to retreat to a kind of irrelevance. Our aim as a left should be no less than to take power in a socialist-led Labour government. That's what we want to do. We shouldn't allow ourselves to be consigned to the fringes. It's not long ago that the establishment, both domestically and internationally, was very alarmed at the real prospect of a real transformative, socialist-led, anti-war-internationalist government taking power in this country. That can happen again. That can happen again, but it won't be easy.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So what would you say the pitch to the country in 2021, obviously having gone through the biggest national emergency since the war, 150,000 people dead in this country, as well as huge numbers of others suffered severe health consequences, the social economic consequences, the inequalities that were lit up but also exacerbated during this crisis, everything from, whether it be shows everything from who's most likely to die from COVID, it's people who are poorer, whether it be universal credit, whether it be many of those in precarious jobs, whether it be the private rented sector. And there's a whole range of issues that have really been lit up. The key workers, of course, undervalued and underpaid, applauded, and then look how they've been treated. But what is the clear narrative, the clear pitch you would say that the Labour left has to the country in 2021?
Well, I think the narrative has to be based upon an updated version of the offer that was made to the country in 2017, the offer that saw us make the only electoral advance of the Labour Party in a general election for around 2 decades. And actually, the policies in the 2017 manifesto and the 2019 manifesto are more relevant than ever, given the crisis and given the divisions and inequalities and misery that the crisis has not only illuminated, but as you say, has exacerbated as well. We need to update that policy offer as well. And key to that has to be, of course, a Green New Deal. And I believe that people want that kind of change. You know, it's fundamentally necessary. You know, life on this planet is at risk because of untrammeled free market capitalism. And the truth is that capitalist solutions won't provide the solutions to climate catastrophe. So I think we need to look at the principles of the NHS and expand them, the founding principles of the NHS, to other areas of our economy. Now, is that the way to sell it to the public? No, it's not. You know, that's the kind of discussion I'm having with you about what I think the theoretical basis of our approach should be. I think we need to go back to what we did in 2017 and have an updated version of that, which was bread and butter policies, which defend people's living standards, but also improve people's living standards. I remember in the 2017 manifesto and 2017 general election, knocking on people's doors, and they knew our policies before we could even tell them on the doorstep, which is the only time in a general election I've ever experienced that, because they were clear, because they were concise. So we need, you know, the practical policies on a mass house building programme, building council houses, you know, a national minimum wage of £15 an hour, more employment rights, a green industrial revolution, creating so many well-paid jobs in a new green economy. I think these things will connect with people. The importance of public transport, for example, in public ownership, the importance of stopping the final Americanization of our national health service so it becomes like an American-style healthcare system where they feel for your wallet before they feel for your pulse. All of these things are actually mainstream issues affecting people on a day-to-day basis. And I think the left can show bold leadership on that with bread and butter, practical policies which can gain support and get us into power.
On Afghanistan, which you mentioned, now we've seen, obviously, after 20 years of direct Western intervention, military intervention on the ground, the Taliban have now retaken the whole of Afghanistan. In fact, more than of the country than they had before 9/11, because the Northern Alliance held portions of the north of the country. So the Taliban now have ended up in more absolute control than they've ever had in the history of Afghanistan. After 20 years of direct military intervention, huge numbers of dead. The West, of course, has a long history there, having backed and supported, armed the Mujahideen against the Soviets and the Soviet-backed government in the 1980s. Much of that funding and military support went through the Pakistani secret services into the most extreme elements, with the consequences we have seen. But I suppose, I mean, two things. Firstly, what should the argument be in terms of refugees? Because ours is a country with a history of backing and supporting dictatorships, wars and so on, which create large numbers of people, well, drive people from their homes, and yet then they're demonized afterwards. And the other thing is, doesn't this just show, again, that, I suppose, not our impotence, but... You know, we've had Iraq, we've had Afghanistan, we've had Libya. All the arguments against those military disasters were horribly vindicated, and that there's no triumphalism to be gained from that, given the humanitarian catastrophe. But those people remain as dominant and as influential as ever. They're statesmen. They're touted as experts on television, as pundits, and those wars will keep happening. What does that tell us?
Oh, it tells us the system's rotten, and it tells us that too many politicians can't be trusted to make these decisions. As you say, the very people who have been proven wrong on Iraq, on Afghanistan, and on Libya are wheeled out to advise us to take military action elsewhere, playing the Churchill and all this. It's all rather pathetic. And I think what the Afghanistan experience shows, and it's been the longest American intervention ever, you know, a longer intervention than Vietnam. What it should make politicians in this country conclude is we need an independent foreign policy. No longer should we be just going along with whatever the United States said. The anti-war movement warned about the consequences in Iraq. They were correct. The anti-war movement and the left warned about the consequences in Afghanistan, and sadly we were correct. And they warned about the consequences in Libya, and sadly we were correct. And as you say, we don't say this with any sense of triumphalism, but surely, surely it's time for a rethink as to what Britain's foreign policy is. I believe we need an independent foreign policy based upon peace, conflict resolution, and human rights and international cooperation. And that's more important than ever when you look at the threats of climate change. So also we need to be avoiding a developing Cold War with China. You know, we need to begin as much international cooperation as possible to maintain peace around the world and create peace around the world and maintain peace, but also to tackle climate change. And so I just think that we're going to see in Parliament this week the same tired old speeches from Atlanticists on the right of the Labour Party, from right-wingers in the Conservative Party, saying that we should maybe stay in Afghanistan or send troops back to Afghanistan. It's absolute madness. What we need to be doing, amongst other things, is ensuring that people fleeing Afghanistan can find safe passage to the UK. Because it's funny, isn't it, that the politicians who are most keen on sending other people's sons and daughters to war in other countries, the same politicians who tend to be least enthusiastic about fulfilling our humanitarian obligations to take refugees, either from those wars that they supported or in general. And so, of course, we need to provide safe passage to refugees from Afghanistan. But we really do need the political class to wake up and learn the lessons. How many more lives have to be lost? How many more refugees need to be created? How many more disastrous foreign adventures need to take place before they sit up and think we can't carry on like this? So I think Britain needs an independent foreign policy, independent of the United States, no longer the junior partner. And I think that the history of the last 20 years, and as well as before that, actually shows that to be the case.
Finally, just in terms of the government, the Conservative government, I mean, what the Johnson government has done quite cleverly is mixed together, I suppose, a kind of populist form of nationalism with strategic investment. These aren't the Osborne Cameron Tories of cut, cut, cut. They're doing targeted spending at communities and particularly demographics, which they're trying to consolidate in their voter coalition. And what's opened up in society, which is difficult for us on the left often to, I suppose, come to terms with, because our understanding of division in society is based on class, is an unprecedented generational divide has opened up in politics. There's an unprecedented number of people under 40 in both the last elections voted Labour, an unprecedented number of people over 65 voting Conservative. And that's because partly home ownership has massively gone up amongst those over 65. They're mostly owner-occupiers. Quantitative easing and so on has pushed up house prices. They're rightly protected by the triple lock in pensions, and they tend to be more socially conservative. That's just what the polling shows. Younger people, precarious, often in the private rented sector, insecure jobs, indebted if they went to university, socially tend to be more progressive. That is, you know, so what the Tories have done is consolidate support amongst high voter engagement, older people, and they're using targeted investment in order to shore that coalition up. What does any flavour of the Labour Party do in that context? Because that is a huge problem that wasn't overcome in 2017, despite how close Labour got, 40% of the vote. And obviously now it's deteriorating. So what do you think that our narrative is as the left on that?
Well, of course, we need to expand our electoral coalition by getting more people from the older age demographic to support us as well. But a word of warning in relation to that, we can't take our core vote for granted. And I think the Labour leadership is taking it for granted. So we've got to be clear. The Labour leadership can't take and shouldn't take the votes of young people for granted. It can't take and shouldn't take the votes of Muslim voters for granted, of black voters for granted, of public sector workers for granted, of teachers for granted, of trade unionists for granted. Now, I think one of the great mistakes that Labour is making, it is a mistake that actually it's not a surprise to see it making again, the Labour leadership, because Peter Mandelson, who's obviously very close to Keir Starmer now, who was of the kind of opinion in the 90s, oh, don't worry about Scotland and the North and Labour voters. They've got nowhere else to go. But if you take people for granted, eventually they do find somewhere else to go. Maybe voting for another party. It may be not voting at all. But I think what Labour needs to do and the Labour leadership needs to do is look at that electoral coalition that we put together in 2017, where we nearly won, and use that as a basis and seek to expand upon it. Because that coalition in 2017 was what I view as the diverse modern working class. And by working class, I mean the majority in society. And I think we need to expand and build upon that. So, of course, we need to get people who vote Tory or who don't vote or vote for other parties to vote for us. But whilst we're going after those votes, we can't take people who voted for us, even in 2019, for granted. And I think that's what the Labour leadership has done. And it's a perilous path. We saw where it led to in Scotland in 2015. And we can't allow that to happen in other areas of the country or in other demographics as well.
Just finally, try and end on a high. Just very succinctly, what gives you the most optimism right now in the current climate?
The thing that gives me most optimism in the current climate is that more and more people are demanding a better society. People, especially young people, are demanding real action, not just rhetoric, on climate change. Look at the huge campaigns against racism, the Black Lives Matter movement. Look at the anti-war movements. All of these things give me great hope. More and more people are experiencing, unfortunately, this rotten system, but they're not just experiencing it. And this is what gives me hope. They're not just experiencing it. They're starting to take action against it. So I believe the left can be confident. The left can be confident about the future, because I think people as a mass movement are going to demand the better society we need. So we've got to ensure that we're plugged into that and don't separate ourselves from that.
Richard, it's been a real pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening, everyone. I hope you found that educational, interesting, engaging, and all sorts of other things. Do support us on patreon.com/OwenJones84. You keep doing the podcast and the channel with our incredible team's work, or use the support function in the description. And do subscribe and leave us a review, please. Some stars, any of those things. But otherwise, lots of love. Hope you're well. Speak to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.